Hello, patrons. I'm Pocket today. Pocket decided to step out.
Oh, my God. She's literally behind you. That's terrifying.
Oh, my God. What?
I didn't want to remake the overlays or anything.
This is perfect. So fucked up, dude.
I love it. It's great. So, I'm all about it. It's
fantastic. So, yeah, Sam, how was it? I've been on the end of Jesse's bullshittery before. What was it like being on the end of Jesse's bullshittery before? or this episode?
It wasn't the fact that the bullshittery happened, because I'm like expecting it to happen. Uh-huh. It was the fact that he then used 2 fate points and a stunt to deal fucking 8 damage to his teammate. Like,
yeah,
that there's the goof, there's Jesse. Like, 8 damage to me to deal 2 damage to the enemy, which he ignored because it didn't do anything. So I took 8 damage for no reason. That hurt me.
Yeah.
That hurt old man Rex.
He tried to kill my entire party at the end of a game once. So
I was watching that. I remember. Yeah. He was revealed to be the villain. Yeah.
Yeah.
That one was actually pretty cool though.
It was.
At least this time we know he's a villain, right?
You know. I mean, kind of, right? He's like he's a quasi villain. I think he's a villain with a good heart. A good metal robot heart.
I don't think so.
I mean, here's the thing about like fate as a thing, and role-playing games generally, games like this that are so character-focused tend to be, you don't play a character at the beginning that is the character you want to play all the way through. You play a character who will somehow or some way change.
Right.
Right. So Jesse's got to set the character up as being the like murder bot now, so that whatever he becomes later,
a bigger murder bot.
maybe he doubles down. Maybe
I
it's all
like
about like
Jesse's
he becomes the villain.
Is, he's a murder bot. We all get murdered. There's no one left to murder. He's at peace. Like that's the progression.
You know, if that's true, my God, I can really identify with your character, Jesse, because I too hope that someday I am the last human alive and that I have. Just
you
a
just
moment.
Light a cigar one, among the bodies.
Yeah, one sweet moment of solitude, free from the hideous voices of humanity. Amen. It's all I ever wanted.
Amen.
Nice.
No, I honestly though, like, I think that Jesse's character is really interesting. Like this idea of a character that is like super evil, right? From the perspective of an organism with morals, right? Like he's very evil, but he has limitations because of his body and because of the programming of the body he's in. And I think that like, I think that that's going to be really, really fun for him to play with. So
I have learned today that those limitations do not extend to my own life.
if you wanted
he can't destroy planets anymore.
If you wanted to tear me apart, you could. I have no strength. I am literally just a robot sex doll. I do not. All I can do is find clever ways of hurting people because I'm trapped in a really flimsy, crappy body that is patched together. Only my face is really what remains of Mel Gibson. Everything else is like patched together parts. So right. You can do with me as you will. If you wanted to kill me, you could do it right now.
That's the saddest story I've ever heard.
Do whatever you want.
I do think that creates a interesting dynamic though, that's usually forced upon you by a GM like Adam, but having the internal conflict be within the group itself and Adam just kind of pulling and picking at that is a fun thing to watch.
It does make it fun having to think like, hey, I want to do this thing, but I have to also consider what Jesse might potentially do.
Right.
So now I have 2 GMs I'm trying to get by.
It's a very like, I mean, alignments are really constricting, but it's a very true chaotic character, right? Mm. Where like, yes, he'll help, but he also hinders at the exact same time. Like whatever is the easiest way for him to help normally winds up being like not the best for the situation as a whole, right?
Yeah, I'm not...
Turning the entire ship into a slaughterhouse to get rid of a slime monster that could also kill me. Right.
Jesse, well, we've been saying a lot of how we feel about your character. How do you feel about your character?
Look, he's a character who is one that sees all organic matter as just the exact same thing. Like, he was programmed to destroy. Like, his functionality of what he was before was something that will probably be revealed later. But, like, literally, he's just programmed to kill everything. And so that's what he knows. But he has enough attachment to the crew that he kind of maybe cares a little bit. So he wants to help. But because of who he is, helping sometimes means, like, well, my solution would be to solve this problem, like, for the fight tonight, is like, well, yeah, I can stop this thing, and if he's in the way, oh, well, but I'm doing what I want to do. Or I'm trying to help Artemis, like, okay, well, if I flip this switch, that solves everyone's problem, without thinking of the repercussions, like, oh, this could really hurt my friends. He's right. Like, oh, well, I'm going to save them by doing this. And so he never thinks that extra step, which is like, oh, there might be consequences that could hurt my friends. It's always like, this will solve the problem. And that's sort of the way he operates.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. The idea of a world killer, like AI, who should be in a giant, horrible battleship, but has been jammed into this like sex bot body, is that's where the drama is going to come from for this character, for sure. And I think it's interesting because at this point in the game, by necessity, because we're leading into exploring this sort of new version of the Nebula Jazz world, it's by necessity mostly about Artemis and Rex.
Right.
But I'm interested in seeing Luna and Basil as characters develop more. But I think it'll take a little more time to get to that place. Right now, they're a little one note because of that.
I'm scared that Luna's going to end up doing something crazy and Basil's going to be like, go on. And she's going to get real dark. I'm worried about that because the way she keeps playing her character, it's like
she's playing it kind of wild
card-y. Everyone.
Yeah.
Pocket's characters always have like build up and then they just have a fucking wild child arc where they just like they just go nuts and like that's going to happen in a crazy scientist.
I'm afraid that Basil will be like, we can do terrible things together. Like, you know that.
Well, her character's definitely built for that, right? Like on a whim she could just and same as Jesse's, on a whim you both could just be like, well, let's just kill everyone. Let's just move on and fucking end everyone, and we'll be there in the aftermath. And I think you've kind of shown that somewhat, Jesse. At least you've attempted that somewhat, and she's just hasn't gotten there yet. She's kind of taken a backseat to the story so far.
It's entirely about, like, it's very much, I think she has an aspect that's basically the end justifies the means, right? Like, she's all about the acquisition of knowledge and having moments to be able to study situations and things, right? So I think that having an aspect like that is going to create lots of scenarios where she can say, well, my character values the knowledge and values the science above everything else. Right. So I'm going to do this in order to get to that, you know, and for sure that can be like really morally fucked up stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Dodge, what about your character? We saw a little bit, when you got the octopus attached to you, we got to see a little bit of, story
I got thrown into it. Yeah. Artemis is like feeling super conflicted right now because, like, on one hand, basically her entire life is like about Rex.
Right.
You know, at this point in her life, it's like no one's ever needed me for anything before. No one's ever wanted me on a team before, really, like as an adult, you know. Not that she's an adult, but she kind of thinks that she is because she's like 13, right? Or the equivalent of 13 for a Mengasi. So there's this conflict of like, okay, well, yeah, I saw proof, right? Like I saw proof that he was involved, but like maybe he didn't know what was going to happen. And like he loves this Mengasi girl. So like, what does that mean? And wants to be able to talk with him about it. And at the same time, doesn't want to, has like these abandonment feelings, right? So doesn't want to bring it up if it means that Rex is going to like throw her away, kind of, you know. Yeah. So there's a lot of internal conflict right now, but obviously, as we saw in the last hour, she's still like completely devoted to Rex because he's like her whole world. And I think that a lot of her arc is probably going to wind up being becoming more independent and like finding value in herself outside of just like being needed, you know?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Kind of growing up in a sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think as someone who's listened to your voice for like 70 episodes of Roleplay now, you do a very subtle job of making your character seem very childlike just by the pitch of your voice.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to give that props because I haven't seen too many people like mess with their voice in such a subtle way that actually is noticeable.
Yeah, I noticed that this episode particularly too. The thing is, it's easy to do like big kind of overdone voices. That's like super easy. But the more subtle stuff, it's especially in a show like this, it could be easy to miss. So yeah, I like it. It's really cool.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Adam, the other thing that I you do this with pretty much any campaign we're in, but this one especially, you've just gone off the rails with the Mel Gibson robots. You're just like, they're just, they're front and center.
Yeah. I work with what I'm given.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the thing is that they're in an environment where that kind of character is appropriate. And now when I need imagery for like a sex robot, it's obviously gotta be like this one. Like there are probably other models, but we don't need to see them because it's not funny.
Yeah. Yeah. Whenever you describe and how they're what they're wearing or what their costume is, uh-huh. I'm starting to picture them as like the roles that Mel Gibson has played. So when he said Viking, I was like, well, he's Braveheart. He's got half his face painted there. And
I just love the idea that there is a generic attractive human, and that's what you get if you want to have sex with an attractive humanoid robot. And then you're allowed to dress him up however you want, and different ones have different shticks, right?
Yeah.
You're like,
although like, I will
I'm
say,
Mel Gibson,
we haven't seen any of the canonical female robots yet from Weird Science.
That's why I was saying, I was like, where are all the Weird Science ones? Did they get recalled? Yeah. Like, what happened to them?
Yeah, maybe they'll pop up next episode or something, or I don't know. Maybe they're not in this world or in this planet, whatever that is.
Sam.
You seemed a little frustrated that you didn't get to bone that girl for information.
No, I was actually not going to bone her. And then I was compelled not to anyway. So I was like, ooh, free fate point.
Yeah. So we talked about this very briefly on the break, and I want to reiterate here something that if we're looking at mechanics, something that we could maybe all do a better job of. I can't do it because I'm the GM and I don't compel my own characters. I have a different kind of pool, but in a situation like that, Sam, if you're going to do something that is like interesting and complicating for your character's life, and you maybe don't want to do it because it won't help you succeed, you can compel yourself, right? You can say, "Oh, I'm going to compel this aspect," and then yes, Sam, I would love to take that aspect. Compel, thank you.
Just give a fate point to yourself.
Yes. Yeah. You say, "I would like to compel myself to do this thing," because you are a player like anybody else, and you can say, I think that this is a stupid thing for my character to do, but it's in alignment with my compel, the same way anyone else would compel you. So y'all can compel yourselves.
I think the only reason we haven't done that is because typically you take a point from the compeller and give it to the compelled.
So there's a pool of an infinite number of imaginary compel points, and so if you want to compel yourself, you can definitely do that.
Cool.
Adam, what about you? Anything that you want to touch on besides?
I am really, really proud of that whole bar fight.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
That was my favorite part of this episode.
That was the funniest thing.
It's maybe one of the like most fun scenes that we've had, for me at least, in Nebula Jazz, because I was thinking, and like this is the thing. Sometimes you get in a groove where you're making shit up, and like, when you walked up to the bar, I'm like, oh, this is the corniest thing ever. This is just like, let's grill the bartender for information about the weird space station. And like, I'm going to like hassle him. And I'm like, fuck all this. Let's just call it out for what it is. And I was like, wouldn't it be really funny if like, this is just what this bar is for like acting out, being a hero. And like, you go in and he's like, oh, okay, I have a script for this. Here we go.
It's like a really badly put scripted Westworld bar.
And like everyone in the bar knows that they have a role to play and like in this thing. And so the idea, and I think this is what's funny, right, is the comedy of that bit is there's an entire bar of dozens of people whose only job is to sit there and wait until some tough stranger walks in and be like, all right, we're doing this for you, buddy. We're here to provide this service to like random adventurers.
It's go
type.
Time. Yeah.
It's go time.
The bit that got me was like the second henchman when the first one gets thrown and I turn around and he's going, 3, 2, and then like ran away and I was like, fuck. Like,
I thought the funniest moment was the gun and Rex saying, what am I supposed to do here? And being like, well, you can take the gun from me or you can hit it out of my hand. Like, I thought that was really, like, at that moment, Rex just completely bought into the whole thing. Like, all right, I'm part of this script now. Like, what should I do?
So I think, and this is one thing that for me at least helps with having chat open, in that in a game as improvisational as this, if I were to try to start that goof and not have access to people's reactions to it, I wouldn't know whether to keep it going or not. But as soon as chat opened, what's going on, and they were all like, "Oh, this is really funny," I was we can play this bit out. But if no one noticed, or if people were like, because that's happened before too, where we've kind of like baited that hook and been like, what do you think? Is this funny? And chat hasn't really responded. And so I've kind of like been like, okay, cool. So we'll end this scene and that's fine. Yeah. Having that feedback is super important, especially in a show whose sort of comedy bits are so important for its overall.
I feel like just from both seasons of Nebula Jazz as we've played them so far, like, Sam is always really good at just, like, because Rex is such a serious character, like, being subversive in a really funny way, like committing to a goofy moment at a time when you would think Rex wouldn't buy into it, you know?
Yeah.
I think that those moments are always really funny, like the emotional circle.
Well, Adam always throws them
season and stuff like that.
Yeah, Adam always presents Sam with those choice. Like, the penguin, I think, is probably one of the best things from last episode. Where I don't think Adam introduced that character to have him eaten, but the second I saw him, I was like, well. And I think the second everyone else saw him, was like, well, that guy's definitely dead. There's
it's
no
a
way.
Penguin, he's
yeah,
dead.
There's no way he's making it out. And so I think as long as Adam keeps throwing those type of scenes, it Sammy's only going to get better and better in dealing with them in the. The sense of building that together is going to get better as well.
It's a bit like Swan Song, in that with Swan Song, the reason why the NPCs, like so many of the NPCs, especially the important ones, were either totally opposite, like Connor, totally opposite from the party, or so much like the party that everyone was like, wait a second, is this what we act like?
Right.
There's several characters. But in this, knowing the characters that are at play and having enough time to sort of figure out the way that they work, it's easiest with Rex because I'm familiar with Rex. But in that situation, to make Rex seem funny or make funny scenes with Rex, I just have to put in characters that are his opposite.
Yeah, right? The
that
foils, are like, right?
Yeah, his foil, right? And then Rex is the straight man in any scene that he's in, right? He's not the one making the jokes. He's the one who's like,
he's the boring outlaw trope. And
yeah,
so it's
yeah.
very easy to build a world where he is the anomaly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, he's just surrounded by weird, surreal bullshit.
Yeah. Yeah,
and it's fun. It's fun picking those things up.
Yeah, I want to see more themed bars like that, or themed. Maybe they just run amok the galaxy, pop up on different planets.
It's a franchise. Yeah.
Yeah. Just create your own heroic moment type situation, whatever you would even call that, but.
Actually, I have a question that sort of falls along with that. Like, we can discover aspects about a place that we go to. Can we, like, if we were to go to a planet, say, and we needed information, could one of us say, like, I want to create an aspect that this franchise of bar is here, and we can get information from it? Or would it have already needed to exist on the planet?
I think you can, like, the way that authorial control runs in Fate, you can't wholesale, like, make stuff up like that. There is a little bit of room around discovering or creating an aspect, but generally that tends to be more kind of in the moment. That being said, as a player, if I'm into the idea, I'm happy to be like, yeah, that sounds great. Let's do that. Right. And you see this in other games. Like when we did the Tales from the Loop one shot, that was something that Jerry and Austin both did a few times. We're like, oh, I think it would be really cool if this were a true thing.
Mm.
Yeah.
So typically how Adam would do it to me is like, I'll say like, hey, we need to go get some Alexatronian shit. And I'll be all right. All right, well, where do you go? And then, like, Adam's giving you the floor to, like, just create the initial scene. Be like, well, there's, like, it's like a embassy in a station. He's like, all right, cool. I'll take it from there. So, like, he gives you, like, that creative floor just to put your thing in. And then...
Yeah. I always feel like you and Jesse come up with the best stuff on the fly. Like, both of you can be totally blindsided and just come up with, like, the best thing. Like,
I think Sam's way better.
And I'm always just like, God, how did you even fucking think of that? Like,
no, Sam comes up with good stuff. I come up with, like, Slorgen Blorgen. That's the difference.
What was the balance of power? Schloopin' Bloopin' or whatever. Yeah.
I say gibberish. Sam has, like, good on-point shit. And I'm like, his name's Jorgen Blorgen. And people are like, all right, sure, fuck it. Yeah, that's the difference.
I love Jorgen Blorgen.
Yeah,
they're all good. Fan favorites, though.
They are usually fan favorites, yeah.
They are usually
that's
fan favorites.
Because they're terrible. We should know by now, people love terrible shit. Hashtag Szechuan sauce. That's where we're at right now in society.
There are varying degrees of goof, right? There are like the low grade, like, slowly building up kind of like goofs. There's the subtle meta goofs, and then there are the schloopin' boopins of the world, and they all have their place. It's just a question about knowing when to use what in what circumstance.
True.
Yeah.
The last question I have is, Jesse, what about that trailer?
If anyone wonders,
because you freaked out going into hour two.
I'm so excited. I'm gonna let you guys know, I'm gonna be in that theater with y'all. It's like, ah! Oh my God! I'll be losing my mind.
Yeah. I will say this. There was a very on purpose, intentional choice at the beginning of that second part to just be like, I'm gonna focus on someone who's not Jesse right now.
Right. Yeah. He was a little panicky.
I know Jesse needs a minute. Yeah. We'll be over here whenever you're ready.
That was a different reality for a moment.
It's okay.
I was like, oh, my God.
I know how important that stuff is to you, so it's all good.
Yeah. That's why if you go watch the VOD on YouTube, there's about a 10-second delay of recording starting and then going into the actual show because Jesse wouldn't stop freaking out.
I was fascinated.
We just kept hearing JP over the comms like, hey, Jesse, could you like get your shit together, please?
Yeah. Yeah, then I just unmuted eventually. And I think it starts out with Pocket or someone laughing like that. But yeah, a little behind the scenes. So, well, cool. Thanks again for the episode. And I think we'll see you guys next week. Patrons, once again, thanks for the support. If you have questions, Adam can see the comments. The cast can't. We'll probably fix that in the coming months so that they can interact with you guys. But that's it. We'll see you next time on Nebula Jazz. Bye-bye.
Bye.